When it comes to the tax man, GE and its lobbyists bring good things to their bottom line.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis, GE in a moment. First, oil is trading at just under $105 a barrel today, and because gas prices are up, the Commerce Department thinks the economy will slow down. It reported the nation's GDP did grow at a 3% annual rate in the last quarter of 2010. Gas prices are also pushing consumer sentiment to its lowest level in more than a year. America's largest corporation, General Electric, paid nothing in taxes for last year, despite making more than $5 billion with its American operations. In fact, the New York Times reports today GE claimed a tax benefit. David Kochanowski wrote today's story for the Times, and he's with us now from New York. Good morning, David.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. How does GE get out of paying taxes?
The tax code is incredibly complex, but GE has the advantage of having a lot of input in the way that the tax code is written. Everything they do is in keeping with the law, but I think you have to keep in mind that their lobbyists that they've spent $200 million on in the past 10 years helped write many of those laws that directly benefit the company.
Is it any different from what other major corporations are doing? They have lobbyists too, right?
They do, but GE is generally regarded as the most effective, and a lot of them come straight out of government, so they come from making the policy for government to make the policy for the company.
You know, the CEO, Jeff Immelt, is part of President Obama's economic team. Does this put the president in sort of a tough spot?
I think there is a contradiction. You know, if you look at what the president said during his State of the Union speech, he said, you know, we need to reform corporate taxes because there's these companies with lobbyists and lawyers who write the rules and end up paying almost no taxes, and then everyone else pays a high tax rate. Within a matter of a week or two, he was there with Mr. Immelt, and GE's tax situation speaks for itself. So they've never really resolved that contradiction.
All right, David Kochanowski, reporter for the New York Times. David, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's do the numbers. Markets are higher right now. The Dow up 78 points at 12,249. A Federal Reserve survey says American families are making less money today than they were before the financial crisis. The news certainly has been focused a while on the U.S. housing market and lately the economic effects on what happened in Japan. But what if a class of hedge funds made money by predicting those types of events? Come to find out, that's a growing business. Here's Marketplace's Jennifer Collins.
They're called black swan funds. Their managers look for things that are unlikely to happen, you know, like the chance of crossing paths with a black swan. Investment advisor John Sakowitz says potential payouts are huge, so they bet like a whole different animal.
They have that kind of shark-like olfactory sense.
Mick Swartz teaches finance at the University of Southern California. He says they're more risky than the usual hedge fund. Black swan funds bet on things that are outlandish.
You know, like the price of palladium might double in a year.
Or world markets might collapse. London investment firm 36 South Capital Advisors saw one of its black swans gain more than 200% during the financial crisis. Now the firm announced it will start a new fund. Chris Whalen with Institutional Risk Analytics says, save your money.
I think the whole concept is suspect.
After all, it usually takes quite a while to collect on the bets that black swan funds make, if at all. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, offering its Raise Your Rates CD as well as online savings account and money market account. Learn more at allybank.com. By Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com. And by Reputation.com, monitoring, protecting, and improving reputations online while deleting personal data from the Internet. Reputation.com.
AirTran and Southwest Airlines are still waiting for Justice Department approval for their merger. AirTran shareholders gave that merger a thumbs up earlier this week. But the task remains making two very different companies one. From station WABE in Atlanta, Jim Burris reports.
Well, hello, everybody. Come in and sit down. Put your seat belt on.
On this recent flight out of Dallas, Captain Mad Dog Watson greets passengers just like he always does.
Well, hello, folks. Now that I have your attention, let me introduce myself. Captain Mad Dog Watson here.
Just another Southwest pilot? Nope. Mad Dog flies for AirTran. Bob Fornaro is that company's CEO. He says the two airlines' cultures are already a lot alike.
The key thing is, I think the attitudes are similar in terms of the way we focus on the customer. And that's the most important.
Fornaro is right. Good customer service is a key goal at both airlines. But it's a poorly kept secret that at Southwest, customers actually come second. Employees come first, explains Cheryl Huey, Southwest Director of Culture Services.
We know if we're doing the right thing for our employees, that ultimately it'll be the right thing for our business, which ultimately is the right thing for our customers.
Southwest generally pays its employees better. It's not facing contentious labor disputes like AirTran. And in the most turbulent economic times, Southwest still makes money. But Southwest CEO Gary Kelly says his airline can still pick up a few pointers from AirTran.
We want to be very measured about any radical changes that we're contemplating, because what they've got works pretty darn good.
AirTran flies its planes more full, more often, and with less overhead than Southwest. All things Kelly says his airline needs to do better in order to grow.
This is a great opportunity for us to do great things for our culture, for our business, to grow Southwest Airlines, and in places that I don't think we could otherwise access.
Southwest will instantly add Caribbean destinations once it acquires AirTran, but Mexico and Canada could soon be on the horizon. In Atlanta, I'm Jim Burris for Marketplace.
Finally, I don't know about you, but when I retire, give me a warm, sunny beach and a beer. I may be in the minority, though. Forbes magazine says some colder weather climates made the list of top places for seniors. Pittsburgh, Indianapolis, Fargo. Yes, Fargo, North Dakota came in at number 16 because of low tax rates and low crime and the availability of doctors. Great place to live? You betcha. The complete list is at marketplace.org. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Are you a klutz in the kitchen? Have you ever wondered what the heck is a brunoise anyway? Chef Zadi can change that for cheap at his new cooking school.
Brunoise is supposed to be 1/8 of an inch. It's a little square.
I'm Kai Rizdal, serving up a culinary school that costs way less than Le Cordon Bleu. That's next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.